It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. We have a guest tonight, and we're going to talk about a very important topic, probably one of the most important to this country at this point in time, even though not a single candidate really addressed it.
I was going to say exactly that, Drew. Great to be with you, that at any point in time, they may have mentioned it briefly, but they went on to something else.
They went on to all kinds of crazy other things.
It's been that
things.
Way ever since George W. Bush attempted to talk about it back in the early part of this century.
So what are we talking about tonight, Christopher John O'Shea?
We are talking about we're talking with Eugene Sterley. We've had him on a couple years ago. He's back, and he's head of the Urban Institute, and he's directing this group that has put together a plan to save Social Security. So that's what we're going
to
talk about.
To save our Social Security Act of 2016, a major step toward reform.
We haven't heard much about that at all in the election cycle. Did you hear anyone else talk about that plan?
I did not hear a bit. I heard a lot about character and, you know, this and that and mudslinging left and right, very little policy coming from.
So we have somebody who was one of the advisors when in the late 80s, when tax reform was done. So he's been around a while talking about tax reform and the issues of federal government and Social Security. And so looking forward to the hour.
Yeah. Hey, Gene, are you with us?
Sure, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, sir. So, you know, Social Security reform, they passed Social Security back in the 30s, and, you know, and they said, this is great, this is perfect. And then next thing you know, you had to reform it a little. Now, the reforms, though, were just new add-ons they did in the 60s and the 70s. And then all of a sudden the 80s come along, and Alan Greenspan leads a team that says, hey, we've got to fix this. And so he sets this thing in place to fix it. $3 trillion trust fund and all this kind of good stuff. Here we are 30-some years later, and you're saying, hey, we got to fix this again. What's going on?
Well, the truth is the fix, even at 83, was only partial, and we knew it. Because back then, the baby boomers were pretty much fully entering the workforce, hitting their prime work age years, and we knew that down the road, instead of having them enter the workforce, as well as, by the way, I should say women who really saved the day, it was women entering the workforce that really started pulling the extra revenues. But we knew even back in 83 that one day, starting about 2008, these baby boomers weren't going to be entering, they weren't going to be in their prime earning years, they were going to start leaving the workforce. And so the big hit on the system, I mean, there's a lot of other issues in Social Security, but the big hit that's so pressing today is this drop in labor force participation that we knew was coming. We knew it was coming in 83 because 83 never really fixed that long-run issue. And this is hitting the system in spades.
So, but one of the things that they told us, Gene, was that they were going to take all the surplus they made for, gosh, a good 25 years, and they were going to accumulate it, which they supposedly did, but really, in reality, all they did was an accounting entry on the government books. What happened to that?
So this gets a little technical. So Social Security typically tries to do something that's balanced over 75 years. Now, remember, you got to remember the system is 90% to 100% to 110% pay-as-you-go. That is, it's basically money in, money out. That's the way the system's always been. When the baby boomers were in the workforce, there was a little surplus buildup, maybe 10% of cost. But remember, for all the money coming in that we taxpayers are paying today, it's going to our parents' generation or grandparents' generation, almost all of it. So there was a little bit of a surplus buildup, and that was going to take place for 25 years, and then gradually, the following 50 years, we were going to spend that down. But now it's 25 years later, now we're only in a spend down stage, and now this, if you do 75-year estimate, all of a sudden I got 25 really bad years coming on at the end. So that attempt to do 75-year balance, and again, I'm being a little technical, it meant as soon as we hit 1984, 1985, the new 75 years now has fewer good years with money coming in and more bad years with money going out. And so the imbalance has been built into the system even from that reform. We've never really gotten the system in order. And I should say we've also never had it adjust. So if we're going to live longer or if we're going to have fewer kids, you can set the system up so the system adjusts its spending or its taxes to adjust. But we never did that. We make these promises and then we'll say, well, we'll deal with the long-term problems in the long term. Well, guess what? The long term's here.
So why is it that, you know, since people are living longer and longer, I mean, back in 1932, when they were devising the Social Security system, the average person didn't live beyond 62, 65, 66 years of age, but that's when you could start collecting. So,
right. So
why haven't we really moved the metric up?
We moved it up a tiny bit in 83. And by the way, that was mainly due to Congressman Jake Pickle of Texas. The Greenspan Commission didn't even recommend that, but moved it up a tiny bit. But by my calculation, in 1940, the average person retired at age 68 in Social Security. And that was when, you know, physical demands of jobs were even worse, certainly, than they are today.
Sure.
Health was less good and everything else. And gradually, people started living now about 5, 6, 7 years longer. And then they started retiring earlier. So instead of retiring at 68, on average, they retire at 64. So what that's meant is the system now provides the average person about 12 more years of benefits than it did originally. And remember, the system is not only now facing all those additional benefit years, all of a sudden it's got more people dropping out of the labor force.
It makes sense.
Fewer taxpayers, fewer taxpaying years. And if you want to get into the private pension side of this story, it also means we've got a lot more people who are saving fewer years in their 401ks or any other plan, and therefore increasingly reliant upon Social Security to cover their needs in retirement.
And about, what, almost 50% are taking money at age 62, the earliest they can.
Right, I'd say the average is the average. I think the median average is about at 64, but a
sure.
substantial portion take it at the sort of set ages, the earliest retirement age. That is, that's the earliest age at which you can get benefits. A lot of people opt in. Then a number of people also opt in right at something called the normal retirement age, which is really sort of an arbitrary number if you look at actually how the system works. But a lot of people really take to these signals that Social Security provides. I think of Social Security as sort of a flagship. We're defined as old at 62. Social Security says we're old when we're 62, no matter how long we live. Even if we start living to 120, we're old.
Right. You got to hold on with me, Gene, because we've got to find the problem. Now we've got to start talking about what are the fixes. But right now I got to take a pause with traffic. I'm going to be right back. Money, riches, and wealth. Do you need help organizing your financial life?
You're out.
About what retirement looks like.
Yep, seen it.
The numbers. The financial physical is the first step in working together to organize your personal finances and your goals. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. Call today to schedule your financial physical and experience the difference. Learn at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com. Or 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Gene Sterley, and he's an economist with the Urban Institute, and we're talking about how to save Social Security. It's a critical question because this law has been in force now for, what, about 70 years now? And many people are dependent and rely upon it. And I got that out sooner or later.
Yeah.
And it's a third, it's one third of the leg of your full retirement, and there's some people that it's 100% of their retirement. It's an important program to protect. Whether you agree with it or disagree with it, it's here to stay. It needs to be protected. So, Gene, how do we save this program? What are you suggesting? Let's go on one at a time.
All right. So I'm first suggesting something that might sound like it's 30,000 feet, but I think you've got to deal with Social Security in the broad sense of the budget as a whole. So as government increases its revenues over time because of economic growth, even at our slow rate of growth, there are more revenues to be spent. But we need to figure out what's the best way to spend those revenues or whether we need to give some back to the taxpayer. But my rough calculations are that 10 years from now, about 2026, government's going to have about $850 billion more in real revenues than it has today. $1.3 trillion, or 150% of that, is committed, and it's committed almost entirely. That is, all the growth in government is committed to Social Security, Medicare, and other health, and then interest on the debt. The interest rising, to be bipartisan about this, because we don't collect enough taxes to pay our bills, so the deficits keep rising. So I don't see how we solve the Social Security issue without solving this broader societal issues. What are we going to do in the future? Do we really want all growth in government to go to these purposes, or do we want to give some back to the taxpayers? Do we want to invest a little more in infrastructure? In my view, do we want to invest some more in education? I think that has to be the bigger picture. It's hard to go to the public and just say, hey, by the way, we've made all these promises to you. We've way overpromised, and now we're going to renege on those promises. Or we're going to renege on those promises to Social Security.
Well, before you go,
having said that, we can get into the details of what you've got to do in Social Security, because you do have to sort of cut back on the extent to which it's absorbing so much of that growth and denying us the ability to do almost anything else.
So, you know, as we, what was I going to say? I forgot totally what I was going to say.
Well, looking at that, as we think about the growth of the budget and we think about Social Security, and, no one wants to talk about Social Security. This year, both candidates are talking about things that are just going to increase the spending, not reduce it, even though they're talking about growth in a different measure. We agree, I think, that growth is an important aspect of this.
Well, and I remember what I was going to say, too, okay. And that is the concept that the problem with Social Security, in my opinion, has always been, Gene, is that it's a huge vote-getter.
Sure.
And so nobody wants to – they want to add and add and add to it since the beginning of the program, but now nobody wants to address the fact that, like you say, we've overpromised.
Right. So the trick – and I'm being partly economic here and I'm being partly political. The trick, I think, is to focus on the growth that's built into the system. We don't have to cut back on the real benefits, say the lifetime benefits we promise to future generations. And quite honestly, we're not going to cut back on the benefits of the people already retired. They're too dependent upon it. So the trick is to try to slow that growth rate down to something that's sustainable. Might have some tax increases along the way. I'm being an accountant here. I'm just saying, you know, the revenues don't match the spending. They've got to be brought into line. But keep in mind that spending is scheduled to grow a lot in the future, and if you can just slow that growth rate down, you can actually get these things back in line over time. It's not really an issue that people retiring 20 years from now have to have lower real benefits, but maybe they don't get the growth and benefits that's already built into the system, built in because of technical ways that it's indexed to grow and our incomes go up, it's indexed to give us more years of support as we live longer, all the ways all that growth is built into the system. That's the trick, I think, within Social Security, and I'd say the same thing in healthcare too, we've got to capture that. We've got to capture that growth. We're growing these systems faster than the economy grows, faster than our tax base, and that just can't work.
Well, you know, we do a lot of retirement planning for clients, and I can't tell you, I'm always shocked, because me personally, I want to work until I'm 80 years old, maybe 90.
Right.
Like Larry, your friend Larry, I want to continue work when I'm 80 or 90 years old if I'm healthy enough to do it. But I can't tell you how many people we work with, they want out at 60. They want out at 61, 62 at the very latest. I'd say it's the majority of people that we deal with.
Right, but I hope you also tell them that if a couple who retires at 62 with an average life expectancy each, that it's likely that one or the other of them is going to make it to 90. I'm talking about new retirees, and that means that's 28 years of benefits, 28 years of support that they need to worry about. And so they might be very well off at age 62, but,
you're
85.
Right. We use
it's a different story.
We use a very powerful program that we work with our clients on, and we show them, well, you know, you got to go out to 95. Here's your chances of success based on this. So you're going to have to modify something, you know, and so we do. They still want to retire.
Sure, and we use a tool from, you've probably run into along the way, Dr. Kotlikoff.
Sure.
And when he puts out his software, he says you should assume they're going to live to 100.
Yeah.
You know, just stick it in their minds that they're going to live to 100 because you don't want to run out of money.
I'm saying the average couple, one or the other is going to make it to 90. That's the average. But as you know, you can't plan on being the average. You've got to plan for the contingency that you might live longer. So that's why he's saying you better plan for living well past 90 because that may well be an occurrence for a very significant number of you.
Yeah,
it seems to me that the full retirement age should be out to 75 years of age, and you should not be able to collect earlier than 68, in my opinion. But tell us what you're thinking about. What are your numbers saying?
So I agree. I think you've got to move a lot on the retirement age. We do have a problem that in the next 20 or 30 years, all of the impact of these baby boomers hits with a bang. So by the time you get to 2035 or so, the deficit in the system is quite large. And it's hard to increase the retirement age anywhere near fast enough to deal with that. But at a minimum, I would basically sort of index the retirement age so you don't get more future generations don't get more years of benefits. If an average couple is going to get 28 years of benefits as a couple, that's more than enough. I think we also have to do a lot to discourage retiring so earlier. If we can get people to work longer, we get more revenues at any tax rate. So I would actually provide more benefits in very old age. I say very old age, say the 80s or beyond, if in exchange for fewer benefits up front. And that has several advantages, even if it doesn't.
Gene, why don't you just take it away? Why don't you just say you can't collect until 65?
Well, I think the retirement age has to go up as well. I'm just saying I don't. There are limits on how far you can go, in actually, you'd have to phase that in gradually over time. And remember, people are living longer too, over this period of time. So sometimes we index that so slowly that it really doesn't cut back on the number of years of benefits at all.
But like Chris was saying at the break to me, he was saying, you know, but the problem is you have certain political parties that don't want to even talk about raising the age at all.
Yeah, across the board, if you heard a Democratic candidate talking about Social Security, they said it's off the table. We do not want to raise the age.
Right. I mean, the bottom line is every year we delay dealing with this puts a greater and greater burden on younger generations. The politics of the recent campaign with disaffected youth and where they wanted to go, what they wanted to do, was we didn't get into the substance, but in point of fact, a lot of these systems, and Social Security is just one of them, actually, we can go into state retirement systems too, more and more really hits on youth. They're supposed to pay for what we in older generations haven't paid for.
Hi, Paula, here we go. Mike's hot.
To hit on them.
All right, Gene, so first solution is the age has to go up. End of the story. It's pretty obvious. And
right.
So,
let's face it, the people who have above-average income are the people who have most of the income in society. So one way or the other, remember, the system's out of balance, so you got to either cut benefits or raise taxes. So one way or the other, they're going to pay.
All right.
Lower income people don't have that much in income, so they're not going to pay that much more even if you raise tax rates, and they don't have that much in the share of the benefits. So now think about it as who has to pay, and then ask yourself, how are they going to pay? Well, one way is increasing the retirement age for everybody. That's going to increase workforce. That's good. Another one is we can take the extent to which the system keeps promising higher and higher benefits over time. It's called wage indexing. We can say, let's slow down that wage indexing for people who have above average incomes.
And we have to interject, break. We've got to do traffic. So, Gene, hold that thought. We're going to come back in a few minutes, and we'll pick up right where we left off.
All right, Gene, hold on. We'll be back. We're in Money, Riches, and Wealth.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
All right, we're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Gene Sterley, and he's with the Urban Institute. He's part of a group that's trying to come up with a way to propose how to save Social Security, because it is a major problem. Nobody talked about it during this campaign. They had a lot of other weird things to talk about, but something as important as this was not
sure.
on the table.
Sure, it's intriguing because we've got an expert here because he's been studying these things for a long time.
Absolutely. And so, Gene, let's go into the next fix. A big controversial issue is new taxes, more taxes. What are you saying there?
Well, I think probably the compromise solution is going to have some more taxes. Probably some adjustment to the maximum wages that are subject to Social Security. I don't know how far we'll go in that direction. Part of that is that with the more unequal distribution of earnings, the amount of wages subject to tax has gone down over time. So there's some adjustment there, and there's some people who, as a matter of health policy, also say that, you know, the non-taxability of health benefits is not a very efficient way to promote health care, and it actually hurts Social Security trust funds. My biggest problem on the tax side is that, as I started out when I went through my 20,000-foot view, is that we're not spending money on anything but basically Social Security, health care, and interest on the debt. And so if we raise taxes in Social Security just to keep spending even more there, it seems to me that puts even more pressure on the rest of the government. That's the basic functions of government, from defense, or we do a study at Urban Institute on children's budget going into a tailspin, education, all these other things. So I'm not really opposed to raising taxes some as part of a broader budget solution, but I have some real reluctance to sort of just do it in Social Security so that we actually go even further down that road of putting all these other programs and all these other functions of government into a downward spiral.
So here's my problem, Gene, and that is that when I first got into the workforce, it was around 1980, and I can't think that Social Security was more than, what, $18,000 of my income was being taxed in Social Security, and now we're at $118,000, and I hear next year we're going to $127,000. That's a tenfold increase. I mean, what the heck happened? You know what I mean? Did we just not tax enough at all for the first 30 or 40 years of the program that we all of a sudden had to raise the tax rate or the tax base by tenfold over the last 30 years?
I think that's actually an exaggeration. I like to exaggerate
occasionally, Gene.
I don't know the exact number, but it was covering maybe 60-70% of wages, probably even then. And then at one point it popped up to 90%, and there were some tax increases there, but some of it was just
Well, what was the tax?
There's a lot of inflation since 1982.
Incomes are
5 or 6 times larger too, on average.
The wage inflation index is just going up each year, 3-4%, and so the number has just gotten to be, you know, has gotten to be that level.
So go ahead. Tell me what you would want to do. You know,
I've mentioned that I would slow down the rate of growth of benefits. So I would also integrate Medicare into this problem. So my calculations again are that the average couple today receives about $1 billion in Social Security and Medicare benefits. About 2/3 of that is Social Security. Now that's the amount they would need in a bank account that was earning 2% real rate of return. Say on their taxes and discounted the benefits of the future. So basically, they need about $1 million in the bank to match what they're getting Social Security and Medicare. For millennials, my calculation is the growth in these systems, again, the growth now being more in the health side, but still a lot in Social Security, the growth of these systems says millennials will get about $2 million. So if I was advising the president, I'd say, look, why don't you make a pitch to millennials? Look, you're current retirees, new retirees are promised this $1 million as a couple. You're promised $2 million. We know we can't afford that. How about we cut back on this growth rate through a variety of ways in Social Security and some in health care, and let's spend a little more on you. Let's stop putting so many of you into student debt. Let's think about investing a little bit in infrastructure. Let's think about helping these wage earners who obviously are a major part in the current election, who feel left out because they can't have jobs. Let's put a little more money there, and within the Social Security and Medicare system, let's not have all this growth go from people getting $1 million to $2 million in lifetime benefits. And by the way, I've taken inflation out of this. I'm not playing with the numbers. I'm giving you real dollars here.
Okay.
Over time. So that's the appeal I would make. And then I would go through these various ways of doing it. And we talked about changing the retirement age. We talked about slowing the rate of growth of benefits, which grow as wages grow over time. It doesn't have to grow that fast. We could put more benefits in old age in exchange for fewer benefits in younger age, which to me would increase labor force participation. That would give us more revenues, make the system more affordable. And then there's actually a lot of other things I would do in this system we haven't even gotten to, where this 1935-1940 view of the family leads to some really strange results, such as that we make people pay for make a lot of people pay for spousal and survivor benefits who can't use them because they're not married. But they pay for them anyway. And so one of the big groups that gets hit there is like these single heads of households out there. You could never do that in the private system. If I'm going to get a spousal survivor benefit in a private retirement system, my 401k, I've got to reduce my worker benefit. But Social Security doesn't do that. It just gives us a way free, which makes some people pay for it who don't get it. And then there's these other strange aberrations. Like if you're divorced with 9 years and 11 months and 20 days of marriage to somebody, you get nothing. If you get divorced with 10 years and 1 day, you're entitled to a full spousal retirement benefit. A lot of this stuff just doesn't make sense. It's been in the system since for decades now.
Sure. Yeah, well, it's another reason we're talking about with single people get hammered. We're saying if you're single and you're a renter, you get hammered on income taxes.
Yeah.
So now you just brought up another reason that they get hammered. They get hammered because of Social Security benefits, how much they're paying in.
Right. Social Security also hammers the two-earner couple that have roughly equal earnings.
Mm-hmm.
Because they really don't get any spousal survivor benefits either.
So the Social Security base when I got into work was $22,900. That was what the base is. It's now next year it's going to be $127,200. That's a pretty steep increase over the last 30 years.
I
got it right here in front of me.
My problem is I've got to convert this to what was the rate of growth of per capita personal income over time.
Sure.
You know, what was the average income when you got to 22.9, and what's the average income now? As I say, the 127,200 is hitting up to, I'd say it's providing, I think, about 85% of, covers about 85% of revenues, and I'm trying to think, or 85% of wages, and I'm trying to think of, I don't know what it was back when it was 22,900.
Yeah.
But so it's,
well, you guys can ponder that, right? Don't we have
let's go on.
Don't we have to take a
pause?
We
do have to take a pause, and then we'll come back and we'll address more about what we say that you can do to fix Social Security.
I think I know what Gene's answer is going to be. We're going to ask him about taking a portion of this money and putting it in the stock market. Because we like to say back in 1982, if Greenspan would have done that with the start of the biggest bull market in the history of the world, this wouldn't be a problem anymore. But anyway.
Anyway, we'll see. We're going to take a pause. We'll be right back with traffic.
That's pleasure.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We're here with Gene Sterley, and we're talking about Social Security and Social Security reform. So we've had a few of the ideas that he feels that we need to be implementing. This is a long thought out plan with he and how many people are working on your committee, Gene?
Well, actually, I just wrote an article on the committee. I wasn't technically actually on that committee. Mm-hmm. So the article I wrote basically tried to advise them on the fact that they had done a good job. I was on an earlier committee that was actually bipartisan a number of years ago and came up with some of the same solutions. This committee was called the National Committee on Retirement Policy.
So what did you know, Chris gave you that lead-in before the show, before the break. What did you, what's your thoughts on that? Social Security money in the stock market.
All right, so I might surprise you here. So right now the system is collecting less in taxes than it's paying out. So I'm not quite sure what money is going to go in the stock market.
Now he's talking about if it would have been done back in 82.
Yeah, but let's talk about what I think would be sympathetic to that goal, but it's different. I think we need to tack on top of Social Security a good private pension reform, and one that would provide very substantial incentives both for employees and employers to have people put aside some number like as much as 6 or 8%, probably 8% of their earnings into the various retirement accounts. And I'm guessing when you run your models that you're actually advising people sort of along the same lines with numbers like that. I don't think we're going to get there in Social Security unless you want to bump up taxes very substantially in Social Security and try to invest that in the stock market or any place else, in which case you've also got to deal with your negative impact on labor force participation and everything else and on work. So I think the trick for get more money into private investment is to latch on a private pension reform on top of the current system. The system's already paying out more in benefits than it's collecting in taxes. The only way it's covering the shortfall is it's getting these transfers from general revenues, that is from your income taxes or from borrowing from China or something, to sort of cover something that's called a trust fund that's earning interest, but it's just interest that the federal government's paying it from one out of one pocket to the other. So,
right, because it's running a deficit, so there's nothing to invest, right?
All right. So here's a question for you, Gene. Why not take the money that they need to collect to continue the Social Security system and do some type of national sales tax and then take the money that's going into FICA for Social Security and allow and force people to privately invest it?
So the dilemma here is again, as I say, because the amount of taxes collected is less than the benefits, is this system has always been a pay-as-you-go system. So think of the first generations. essentially, Social Security collected this money and immediately paid it out to your grandparents. So there, you know, yeah, there's a tiny buildup, but for the most part, the money just went right out. Now, you have these people relying on benefits. So where, if you decide you're going to try to take revenues, whether it's Social Security revenues or some new sales tax revenues, and you're going to invest it directly, say, in the stock market or in people's individual accounts or whatever else it is, how are you going to cover the benefits that you've already promised to people? We're not going to cut back.
No, what I was saying is whatever taxes you need to continue the current Social Security system, you do it through a national sales tax, and then you turn around and say, but whatever part of your wages you were putting into Social Security, they're going to go into an investment account for you, and so now national sales tax is going to pay for the Social Security system, but whatever you were currently putting into Social Security is going into a private investment fund for you now.
Well, I think you're going to have I think that solution would have a huge increase in both taxes and in mandated saving that would be quite substantial.
And then you have
Remember the system's paying out this money. You're going to cover it with the sales tax. Well, if you do it that way, by the way, that's a substantial tax increase even over the current tax rates.
Right. Well, but here's my problem, and I work with a lot of clients, and the amount of money that comes out of small business people who are in early stages of their small business, $50,000, $100,000, that 15.3% that they get hit with that isn't tax deductible for the most part is a huge hurdle for them to deal with. It's a huge hurdle. It's a huge hurdle for any business to pay that, especially if they hire employees. It's a huge hurdle.
Well, I haven't done the exact calculation, but I'm guessing the sales tax that would replace that 15.3, remember that 15.3 in the current system is going to have to jump to something like 20
right.
to pay for the system if you do through taxes. And if you convert it to a sales tax, the sales tax rate's probably not far from that. So you're talking about adopting a 20% sales tax rate to solve a 20% Social Security tax rate. I'm not sure I've got the exact figures, but I'm in the ballpark. I think that's a pretty substantial tax increase. I think you got to slow the growth rate of benefits. And if you try to put the mandate on top of that of another 15% Social Security tax rate going into private accounts, well, all of a sudden you've got a sales tax of 20% and a Social Security mandate of 15. That's just a huge amount to impose on this small business.
Well, we've
got beneficiaries taking out benefits.
I'm not saying that small business should pay for the mandatory savings rate. I'm saying individuals should pay for it.
Well, so I'm arguing let's cut back on the growth rate of benefits.
Absolutely.
And let's add on some private pension reform in ways that small businesses have a lot of encouragement to go there, but we're not necessarily mandating they do it. If they, you know, like especially the startup business, you know, they just want to make widgets. I helped start a community foundation in Alexandria. We spent more time on trying to figure out what to do with employee benefits than almost anything else we had to do. Just dealing with all the rules.
And I understand.
That's pathetic to small business.
Oh, a pension plan is one of the most. I'm a tax expert, but I just don't try to fool around with pensions because the complications of just putting in a little 401k. Plan in a company is unbelievable, and the amount of expenses that you have to pay to keep it up to date is unbelievable.
It doesn't have to be that way, but I agree. It's partly because you have so many options you have to consider and things you can't do, as opposed to just something simple. Like what we should do is for employers, their role would be to through a payroll processor to put some money aside, whether it's their money or the employee's money, and then they should be out of it. They shouldn't have that much in the way of fiduciary responsibility other than to, you know, be a good servant for the money.
So we only have a couple minutes left. I was just going to interject, Gene. You've been watching Washington for a long time. What prospects do you give to have this thing be addressed before it blows up in 15 years?
Before it blows up, I say very high probability. Near term, probably low probability. My wife wants to find me as a long run optimist and a short run pessimist, so maybe this is keeping with that.
Well, because I think there are people out there. I mean, before 2001, when Bush started talking about it, nobody would talk about it at all. So you're seeing at least the discussion. You see, Republicans are saying, "Hey, we have to raise the retirement age, and we have to do things to really start attacking it." So the discussion is there. people aren't getting just run out of town by saying it. So,
Gene, if somebody wants to follow you, we only got about a minute. Somebody wants to follow what's going on in Social Security and some of the things you are talking about. How can they do that?
I write a blog. It's called, it's basically Government We Deserve. You can find it at www.governmentwedeserve.org or www.governmentwedeserve.com. Or I can even give you an email, and I can just put them on a mailing list. It's estueurle at urban.org. Maybe you could put that on your website, too, if people want to look it up. I'm not sure they
you get that down,
that
Chris?
That quickly.
Yes, it's your last name, Sterley.
It's East, yeah, it's Sterley at urban.org. But again,
at urban.org.
Governmentwedeserve.org, governmentwedeserve.com, and sign up as well.
Yeah, we'll do that. I appreciate it, you know, because I've been reading Government We Deserve for the last about 4 years, since the last time we had you on the show. And it is unbelievable all the neat ideas that you talk about and some of the things that you're trying to encourage Washington to be doing. So I appreciate your work that you're doing, sir.
I appreciate that. And if they're interested in a book, which I think describes how we got in this current mess from Social Security to everything else, it's called Dead Men Ruling.
Yeah.
It argues that we've been going down this track for 30 or 40 years, and it's basically a lot of dead men, mainly men, it's not a sexist statement, legislators and presidents of the past that have sort of increasingly put us in this box of promising more than we can deliver.
Gene, I appreciate it, and we're out of time. This is Money, Rich, and Wealth. Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.